Hello, dear influential leaders, movers, shakers, influencers. This is Lenka, and this time I am making this podcast in Bali. I am here for a month on an amazing trip. For those who followed us, you know that I just decided in the beginning of October to take a month free and go travel and go on a silent retreat. Why silent retreat? Well, I didn't really know at the early beginning when I booked this trip. Why Bali silent retreat? I didn't know either. The only thing that I really knew is that it comes from my heart. I followed my intuition, gut feeling, whatever you want to call it. I just followed my truth and decided to go on a month's trip. Now I am at the end of the trip and I can tell you it has been life-changing. And before I left, I thought that would be so amazing to meet the founder, the creator of the silent retreat in Bali. And I just kind of released this wish into the universe. And as we know, universe always delivers. So today I am here with Ibu Patricia. Ibu Patricia started this beautiful Bali silent retreat approximately 10 years ago. She had this idea, this call, this vision. For most of us, it's really not understandable how a person can get such a clear vision. So for this reason, I wanted to interview Patricia to really get to know where this vision came from. And moreover, how easy or challenging was it to actually fulfill this vision? And I was amazed by the quality of services. Guys, when you want to have a 20-star experience, then go to Bali Silent Retreat. People there are way beyond angels. All the staff is being called an angel, and I can tell you they are angel, and they are giving you heavenly experience. Operational excellence, you would say that they are in the middle of nowhere in Bali, so probably the service is not so good. Wow. Like, guys, wow. The service, the way how they run is so smooth. And do not forget, it's silent, so nobody really talks there. So I'm gonna stop talking right now because my words are not so important. What is more important is to hear this beautiful story, understand how business is being run in Bali and how to actually live stress-free in silence. So at the end of this interview, I'm gonna share with you more about our upcoming masterclass. But for now, it's time for Ibu Patricia. Patricia, welcome to the Influential Executive Podcast. We met in Bali Silent Retreat, where one of the amazing co-founders, visionaries, and you know, when I came to Bali, or before I even came to Bali, I had a wish, a desire, and that was to interview one of the visionaries, one of the owners of the Bali Silent Retreat. And I thought it's going to be probably a small, older Balinese Hindu man who really wants to bring people back to what is really life about. And really funny was that I didn't know who the co-founders are until the day 8, I think, when one of the ladies who was really in silence ran into me with a book, with the nice photo books that you created, and she was pointing on you, this, and then the co-founder under it. And that's when I realized that the little lady who is walking there every day with her basket is the co-founder. But before we actually get into the story about Bali Silent Retreat, I don't think you're Balinese. How did you end up or appear here in Bali?
Well, first of all, Lenka, thank you so much for this opportunity to share. Thank you. And you've been here for over 20-some days, so you have had the full and deep experience, immersion into silence, and I have to tell you, I really respect that and honor you.
Thank you,
and am grateful that you bring your love and your presence here, because I'm pretty sure this magical land, there's something really special about it. I'm pretty sure it absorbs the love that people like you have, and then it radiates it out. So thank you. So your question is, how did I come to Bali?
Yeah.
Well, that was an accident, like it is with most people. Come to Bali for 2 weeks and 20 years later, they're still here. So that's sort of my story, 15 years ago. Great. So I was studying and teaching in Singapore, spiritual classes. And one of my students said, "Ah, you've got to go to Bali. You're so Bali." And I came, and I was, and I retired 2 years later and was doing conflict resolution, professional mediation for people, gratis, free. I did public prayer, generic prayer, twice a day. I had time to spend with people and really be present. I sold everything in the U.S., took about 2 years. And one day I looked at myself. I had a coffee cup, 3 pieces of utensils, a coconut bowl, and I thought, that's minimalist. That is lovely to have sub-zero responsibility.
Wow.
And then look at this. Yeah.
So that's beautiful. And then I read that you got a calling, you got a vision. So how do you feel a calling and vision? And when was that?
So in about 2007 or 2008, I received a calling very specifically to build a silent retreat for prayer and meditation. And my response to that was, "Oh, thank you very much. No, thank you. I'm retired. I don't have the money. I don't have the experience. And I certainly don't have the desire to do that sort of stuff. So call somebody else." And now we see how well that worked out, right? So finally I gave in and I went into prayer and I said, prayer, meditation, whatever a person wants to call it. And in sort of a grumpy way said, "Okay, if I have to do this, at least give me an address." So I received a vision of two mountains and water and hot springs.
Okay.
I thought, couldn't be that difficult, couldn't be that many hot springs. Let's go. Let's at least start looking. I kept trying to create opportunities to cancel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I didn't find the right place.
Yeah.
Sorry, didn't find the right place. Can't do. Keep looking for a way out, right? So just 2 days later, talked to a guy on the street accidentally and said, "If you know of somebody who knows somebody who has land for sale near hot springs, call me." He did. I came up here. And this is sort of a sweet story in that this guy showed me a piece of land about the size of this room, and I was getting agitated, like I traveled all this way, and in it, that sort of typical entitled tourist, expat thing of, anyway, we're walking down into the rice terrace, up above the rice terrace, and I notice his shoes are these beautiful, probably very expensive Italian shoes. And I thought, this man is ruining his shoes for me. Who do I think I am to be grumpy? And 30 seconds later, we come up to the top, and there are the two of these mountains here. There's a field of rice full of water that has just been harvested, and I know there's hot springs behind me. Okay, now we have the location. So I start working with the villagers. I can see that's not going to work out very well.
Mm-hmm.
Too many people, too many cooks in the kitchen, you know. And the leader of the village, very humble, in a very soft, gentle voice, said, "Oh, excuse me, Ibu, but my family has land just north of here. If you would like to look at it, maybe this would work for you." So we come here. This is 4 hectares. Which is like 15 acres.
Wow.
This is it. Okay. So then I began to negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's going to cost a lot of money. I know how land is managed in terms of purchasing and leasing. Thank God foreigners cannot buy land here. You can only lease.
Oh, yeah.
The lease is priced per ara, which is 10 meters by 10 meters.
Okay.
You pay all the money up front. If you lease for 10 years, we would pay 400 ara for 10 years up front.
Wow.
The maximum amount is 25 years. And I had told the family what my vision was and what I was trying to do. And somehow I ended up with 100-year lease, no money up front.
Now I have goosebumps.
Now we have goosebumps again. So the idea was that somehow the money comes to me and I get my money back. When the loan is paid off, this place, 50% of the money goes to the land. I mean, goes to the landowners, mm-hmm. the family who owns the land. And the other 50% goes to the people who work here.
So you're a nonprofit?
Worker-owned. It will be worker-owned. It's not a nonprofit.
Wow.
So in a couple years, that is a reality. So these people, this lifestyle is, this job is not a job. It's a lifestyle for them and for their children and for the grandchildren and for their great-grandchildren. Because we can't even imagine 20 years. I mean, 100 years. The maximum apparently we can imagine is 20 to 25 years, according to studies. So there we go. That's how it started. And then I had decided that we must respect the land and not move any land.
Okay, what does that mean?
No digging, no, have the land decide where the buildings go.
Wow.
And then I decided that it needs to be off the grid. Mm-hmm. To not be dependent on public electricity, so we are off the grid, and 100% organic, more than organic, because organic farms still usually use artificial fertilizer, which thank God for artificial fertilizer or we'd have famines again, but we don't. And also we filter the water, the agricultural water that comes in that does have chemicals in it. So we filter that through two or three ponds first. So the idea was to have fresh food picked that day, and that's what we eat, to try to reinstill a totality of health and wholeness. Cleanest air, cleanest water, cleanest food.
And the food is delicious.
Isn't it amazing?
It's heavenly.
The combinations of flavors. I mean,
like I already read on the internet, right? I made my homework. Like I really did my research. And everywhere we're stating like, this food is amazing. And like, don't count on any diets. The thing is that I didn't want to believe that there is no like artificial sugar. There's nothing that will be good for your body. And especially the snacks and the cookies. I mean, this is, and the crispy taro or cassava. I mean, yeah, that's just for the food is amazing. You were not alone. You met another visionary, Pak Santu. When did you, or how did you find each other? That's the most important.
Well, a couple of things happened in my first 2 weeks in Bali. I met Pak Santu, who is a room boy at a small hotel in Ubud. I met a writer from Canada, and I met an American who has built a dynasty, the Yoga Barn, okay. All of that stuff. And those two women and Santu took me under their wing. Aww. And when this happened, I found this space, and I told Santu, his eyes lit up like Christmas. And he calls me Bibi, which means auntie. Oh. And he said, Bibi, I also have vision. He had had a vision for a long time about a place where people could pray of all religions, no religion, and where we could grow vegetables organically and become one with the land. Because he's sort of jungle boy. You've met him. Yes. And he prefers to sleep in the jungle, walk in the jungle, barefoot.
Barefoot.
Yeah, barefoot. And he's happiest in an indigenous natural environment where the plants are sort of, the plants and trees and jungle kind of give you a Reiki treatment, right?
Yes.
There's this massage, emotional, psychological, energetic massage. He likes that. And so he tries to keep himself in that kind of space.
So that's how you met each other, and that's why you decided, like,
we
to
did.
Visionaries.
We started together, and there were a lot of aspects that he was very, very important with. I could not have done it without him. For example, the lease is a very complicated lease. Mm-hmm. So we had the Balinese type of attorney, which is called a notaris, okay. And we had a Western attorney. Both of them drafted leases. Both of them had multiple mistakes. Songtu read every word, caught every mistake. He watches the details to protect, in protection, and in, how would I say, to proactively avoid issues in the future.
Beautiful.
And it still goes on today. He watches things
that's,
like
that's
that.
That's amazing. You really compliment each other.
Yes.
So nice to see. And after 18 months of construction, you found something extraordinary. You found that this place has a huge history. Share with us the history.
That's correct. You've read the books.
Yes,
the
all
archive
of them.
Books. Yeah.
I made those books for the staff, but the guests love them.
Yes.
I made them so that we would never forget. I don't know if you saw the picture of the tiny little motorbike road that...
Yeah, before you rebuild the entrance. Yes.
Because we do forget if we don't have visual prompts to go, so you could see what it looked like before. So yes, a year and a half into construction, I was walking down toward the labyrinth, which by the way was the very first constructed man-made thing. And then the second thing was the octagon yoga meditation shala. So I saw some stones to the right. They were sort of big stones. And we were cutting away a path to walk that would be bigger for the workers to carry pillars that are 1 ton, you know, concrete bags again. So we had to make the path kind of big because everything was hand carried in. I know that makes you sort of...
Yes. So,
yeah. And I said, those are not random stones. Where are those stones from? And the family took me into the compound, which is not far from here. And then in about 2 or 3 hours, they read to me the history. And what happened was, almost 600 years ago, the king of Tabanan is the regency here. It's the biggest regency in Bali. It's the regency that is protected by UNESCO heritage. So the king went to meditate for about 3 or 4 days in Samadhi, which is a deep, deep trance. Mm-hmm. During that prayer, he put his two sons in charge of the palace. One of the sons, I can't remember, one brother cut down the banyan tree. Bad idea. Cutting down banyan tree is a bad idea. So the other son, I think it was the second son who didn't cut down the banyan tree, he went crazy. He started screaming at the top of his lungs and wouldn't stop. So the king is looking for a healer. No one's touching that. No one's, you know, no one wants to try to heal the son of the king, right? But he heard of a priest down south, directly south of here, in a famous temple called Tanalot.
Yeah.
And that priest had a vision. That priest had a vision of a mountain and water and hot springs.
Goosebumps.
Do you have them as well?
Yep. So they walked. Of course, they didn't take a bus. They walked, the king and all his entourage. Walked down and walked back and brought the son, and the son was healed right where the labyrinth is. There's a little altar there. There are a bunch of stones sort of in a circle in the ground. And so the son was healed, and the son said, Dad, I do not want to go back to the palace. I want to stay here. Build me an ashram. Build me a village. And that was the beginning.
Wow.
And we have the same thing going on 600 years later. Voila.
Wow. My goosebumps are not going I'm literally getting cold. Wow, it's a beautiful story. That was so 18 months from the beginning of, let's say, the beginning of the building phase. Can you walk us through the reconstructions, because we are 10 years later today?
Yeah, that's right. It is 10 years. Well, first of all, we had to build a storage place to keep products and supplies and materials. And a friend of a friend knew a village who is selling what's called a gudang, which is just a big wall-less structure with a roof where people store stuff. It was huge. It was as big as this building here. So we put that up here at the top of the hill, and then we began to build the road. And then we built the prayer octagon and the labyrinth at the same time. And things just began to evolve. And I knew exactly where to put the single rooms and the dormitories. I wanted to make sure that everyone could afford to come here.
Yeah.
And so then slowly, I think the last thing that was built was the lodge. And then the office, we keep sort of moving out a little bit from the retreat. All of the materials needed to be recycled. So everything has been someplace else before.
Yeah, you adopted the houses, right?
Yes.
Some of them.
Yes.
Where do those little bungalows houses come from?
They come from Sulawesi, and it's a type of wood called ironwood. There are four grades of ironwood. Okay. For example, the floors are, this floor is made out of first-class ironwood. Okay. And the big pillars in the lodge that are a ton, 1 ton each, are ironwood.
Wow.
But the bungalows are lower class ironwood.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, nobody wants maintenance of termites and have to rebuild something every 10 years. So I wanted this to last 100 years.
Beautiful. And the first, so after the labyrinth, you had the yoga chalet built.
Yes.
It is also a story. It couldn't have been placed just somewhere because there's also crystal hanging from the center of the roof. So I would like to know, what's the story behind this?
Oh, you've heard the stories then. Okay. Well, I received another sort of calling in that I was told there was a cave up on the mountain, Mount Batu Karu, which, by the way, is the most westerly mountain and is considered the female mountain, where the source of all water is. And the Balinese, theoretically, once a year, are supposed to come to the mountain and be grateful in ceremony for the water that they receive, which circulates all through Bali. The most easterly mountain is Agung. He is the male mountain and has done a little bit of temper tantrum a couple years ago, a little bit of volcanic work, yes. But Batu Karu is gentle. So I was told that there's a cave up on the mountain, and I'm supposed to put a specific crystal in that cave. So I'm thinking, here's more work I really don't want to do and I really don't care about. But I emailed Sanktu and said, I've been told there's a cave. Probably not. And if there is a cave, it probably faces the other direction anyway. But just could you ask the family? So the next day he emailed back and said, yes, Bibi, there is. It faces exactly toward the retreat. I'm thinking, okay, here we go again. So I brought the crystal to Bali and they went up to the mountain, but I did not know where to put this octagon prayer structure, meditation structure. So they were up there and I was sloshing around in the rice terrace, which was on the edge of the jungle, and I received directions sort of like when you were a kid. Did you ever play that game called hot and cold? You get closer to
yes.
the goal.
Yes.
Yes. It was sort of like that, but it was with smells. The smell got stronger the closer I got. The smell got weaker the further I got away. And so once it was the strongest, I stuck a stick in the ground. And that was the center of the octagon.
And I can tell you, the vibration is amazing.
Isn't it amazing?
It is. One of the yoga teachers, Xiu Lei, she mentioned that there is a huge like vibration energy under it. So I said, you know what? Like, I do Reiki. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to give it a try. So first I meditated, then I did Reiki on myself, and then I came there to heal someone.
Okay.
What we both felt... It is indescribable.
Indescribable, isn't it?
It is. It was beautiful. Also, the person was laying and who I then treated with Reiki. She said, what I felt, I can't explain it. My bones were moving into the right places, and she smoked. She said, I suddenly felt like cigarettes are walking around me because I was cleaning her lungs at that moment. And it was just because of the crystal, the energy was beautiful.
So there's that connection between the crystal in the middle of the octagon and the crystal up on the mountain. And it is amazing. You're right.
The vibration is beautiful. Mm-hmm. So what's the mission and the vision of Bali Silent Retreat?
Well, I had to determine that first in order to move forward. So the vision is to have hundreds of people in prayer and meditation from all over the world. Mm-hmm. That's the vision. In peace, in wonderment, without any religion, without any rules, so to speak. And that's the vision. The mission is this place, to provide the space.
To provide a place safe for people. And I felt safe. I felt welcome. I mean, I wrote everything on the feedback form, and that one thing that I was amazed by was the staff, and they made me welcome since second one. I was just here, and the payment was going on, and you know, there was a credit card, like, take this and then, and there were, you call them office angels, and they are really angels.
They really are.
They're like, just take your time, you know, there is no hurry in here. It was so sweet, and then I was being accompanied all the way into the dorm and being shot everything. I felt like home since second one. So you've seen many people coming and leaving throughout the whole building phase, and now when it's almost ready, or I would say ready, why do people want to be silent? What are the benefits of being in silence?
Well, when they first come here, they don't know. When they leave, they understand. Basically, I think what it is when we stop talking, all of us, the ego goes down. And when the ego goes down, it's easier for the divine source to come in. And the whole idea is that we expand our divine source, we expand our connection, that they're one, we are one with nature, one with the divine source, one with each other as humans. And that happens here. People write about it all the time. And I cannot take any credit for it, because each person does their own work. Each person walks their path to embracing that divine source or their truth, or they release obstacles in their way because they walk the labyrinth, or they're doing yoga, or they're doing meditation, or they walk down to the crying bench and just sob it out, cry it out into the river. They did so many various things to facilitate unlearning, disconnecting from some of the stories that we've experienced throughout our lives, through television, parents, church, friends, media, all of it. So there's another dimension in our lives that's a little more calm. And when we stop talking, that's the first step. I see people who just fall asleep reading a book in the lodge all the time, right in front of strangers. Everybody just
yes.
falls asleep.
Yes.
Isn't that sweet?
It is amazing.
Yeah.
And as you said one thing, you don't know when you're coming here, you know when you're leaving. And very strange was that I once was meditating in the morning and I said, I'm going silent. Because my friends, they were going in silent and closed doors and all different places. And for me, it was important that I can take my notebook, I can take my pen so that I can journal, I can write my thoughts, I can read, because I brought lots of books with me as well that I wanted to read about mind and about who I am, because that's my big project. And people were asking me, why Bali Silent Retreat? And why 3 weeks? I said, I don't know. Don't ask me. I don't know. It was just a feeling I'm supposed to be here. And I had to really take time to kind of stop the chatter, the controlling person, the planner person, you know, the person who sabotages your future, the person who likes to be stuck in the past and self-pity kind of. And it was beautiful to remove the layers. And I was constantly seeking for, so why I'm here? Like, because I know that people will ask me, so what did you find? And I was like, this is exactly what I found. All of those voices who sabotage me from being here and now, the the people there are the voices we need to control and predict. And that's why I didn't enjoy presence. Once I made that click, I was like, wow, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. I'm now here and now. It's awesome. When I ask you, what makes this place special and different from other retreats, what would you say that it is?
Well, before I answer that, can I tag on to what you just said?
Of course.
Okay. So when people leave and they're different, they go into the world and they radiate that out also. They walk the world making decisions in a different way, a little more conscious about how they live, what they eat, how they make ethical choices. To make ethical choices, even though it's more work and more time and et cetera, et cetera. And one of the reasons we give everybody a book, a little booklet. Did you get your booklet? There's a little journal we give to everybody.
Yes.
And on the front of it says, for the ancient art of pen writing.
Yes.
So that when those moments come up, people can write instantly. They don't need to have a journal. And that's also why we have so many books in the library. From every sort of philosophy or self-help, I try to keep up on it. Unfortunately, we have about 200 books stolen every year.
Really?
Yeah, go figure that. Place like this.
Wow.
So anyway, we have to have a special budget just to buy new books. So anyway, your question. I can't remember it now.
Well, what is special about this place, according to you?
What is special is pretty much everything that we've just discussed of, hey, people, the reality that people have an awakening according to themselves, not according to me, not according to anybody else, but them and their destiny, maybe their historical cellular memory. They work through that kind of stuff. They self-heal all the time, just aha moments. So that's what makes it different than other places. Well, actually, a lot of other places that happens also. But here, it's sort of a five-star food and
stars.
And the grounds and the programs. You're getting all sorts of cultural programs. You get to learn about the Balinese, so you get to do that. You learn stuff about the Balinese you won't learn anywhere else in Bali. Taking on these medicine plant hikes and the cultural stuff, like why they carry the baby for 6 months, and Agnihotra fire ceremony where you can purge yourself of anything you don't want into the fire. All that stuff combined, I think, makes a big difference. But I think the most is you have the freedom to do nothing or do something. And in other places you go, there's more of an agenda, more of a curriculum. Here, the only requirement is don't socially talk.
Yeah, exactly. Your staff is Balinese. And obviously there are cultural differences. What I've seen was amazing service, because I travel a lot, and mostly when you come to a hotel or when you come to any kind of service-based building, let's say, my conclusion is mostly that the people are not interested in what they do, or the service is just not really there. Here it's just the opposite. Here I was so surprised by their English. The office angels, they could answer all of my questions. Like, I asked them to make a copy of my book, of your book that is in the library, and nothing is your problem. Like, everything is being handled properly, fast, discreet, silent voices. So how did you manage such a service, such a level of service?
Well, we focus on solutions. Everything has a solution. That's sort of one of our little mantras business-wise. So we brainstorm a lot. There's not a boss. There's not a boss and a boss and a boss and a boss. Everything is collaborative. Everything is brainstorming. Because I might have two or three ideas, and someone else has an idea, and another person, and we come up with the right solution. So because they have solutions and they have structures, if there isn't a solution, they feel safe also. The staff feels safe enough to brainstorm. They can make decisions and they can love you. They can love you because they have the freedom to love you and respect you. And they kind of know that you're coming here to change something, even though you might not know. Mm-hmm. You're coming here to shift, let's say, shift. They know that people come here a little bit entitled, mm-hmm. as we do as tourists, and they leave differently because you wash your own dishes, you make your own bed. There's respect among the guests, and that starts with the office angels respecting you and knowing that maybe you've traveled for 42 hours and a little bit grumpy. I don't mean you specifically.
No, but I can imagine people checking are tired.
Yeah,
people are tired, and they're always smiling the whole day long. And I had my goal here, and that was to make everyone smiling. Also, some of those people who came here, obviously, and were strictly in silence. And then I just walk, and when we meet with our eyes, I just give a huge smile. And it took me sometimes up until like 100 looks to get the smile. But every single time I got that smile, I said, nice. Like, there was a shift in the energy. And that's what they do. Like, every single person here, whether they are gardeners, by the way, the garden is fabulous. It's fascinating what you've built here. All of them, they're just waving, and we smile, and we wing, and we send air kisses to each other. It's just amazing. I love it here.
Well, each department is their own entity. Mm-hmm. They make their own schedule. Mm-hmm. They decide what sort of time frame they have to do their work. So they get to decide. They don't have some boss telling them what to do. The Balinese have a lot of ceremonies. And sometimes that interrupts a Western sort of business and how the Western business runs. But by the fact that they love their job so much here, they make their own schedules. They juggle their own schedules completely. And another department may have to come in and help out, but that's fine. They help each other all the time. And you've probably heard them when they didn't know you were listening. They giggle and they laugh. And this is not a job for them. This is their life and their lifestyle. And the lifestyle that I hope for their children and their grandchildren.
I hope so too. I really do. Suppose that I would go for a retreat. Or let's say we have many listeners who are playing with that idea. I want to go for a retreat. I want to go maybe even to silent retreat. What would be the tips that you would give them? How to find the right place? How to prepare for such a retreat?
Well, it's very popular now to go on retreat and then to go on a silent retreat. And there are different levels. I've sat in meditation for up to 13 days on a concrete floor. That's pretty severe. Well, you know, not everybody can do that, nor do most people even want to do that. No. So I would say this is probably the easiest type of introduction into long-term meditation. Mm-hmm. You can go anywhere and meditate. If you want to meditate in the octagon, fine. The star bed, fine. The crying bench, fine. Your room, just out on the grass. You can do walking meditation. You can go to the water meditation and let the water flow over your head. That's a different type, because different methods at different times are going to work for different phases that we are in. Mm-hmm. So a good introduction would be a week. So for example, if a journalist wants to come here, mm-hmm. we insist that they stay for 5 nights, because that's a minimum of what you need to really understand what's going on. 20 some days, you get sort of the full, you get to experience all feelings, all emotions, mm-hmm. all aspects of disconnecting and meditation. But still, if you have a craving where you want to go talk to someone, you can go to the hot springs in the morning, mm-hmm. and blah, 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 blah. But then you go back, yes. into your practice, whatever practice it is. So I would highly recommend looking at what the exact curriculum is and seeing if that is going to meet your need at this time. The food is really, really important. A lot of places serve just a bowl of something. But that austerity has its place also. Nothingness, sitting for 9 hours at a time, only a bowl of rice. Most people don't want to do that, but they might get to a point where they do. So, but as an introduction, having some, we have two sessions a day of yoga and meditation. Yoga to prepare the chakras and the body for meditation. We have different kinds of meditation. So this is sort of like the introductory try, kind of like the dim sum. You take this taste, like it or not, that, and then it's your choice. So I recommend that you fully examine what you want at this time and look for a place that's going to meet that need.
And I can definitely confirm what you just said, that for me it was the combination of silence and then applying it in a real life. So I heard all of those voices that I was glad to say goodbye to, and then I was happy that I go to the village, and many people didn't know that, but I feared talking to strangers, asking questions, asking for help, just really somehow saying, what is it that I want? I was just afraid to surrender and to be judged. And this place was amazing for being loved. That was just the opposite. So I was going to the village and look people straight in the eyes and ask them questions and stop things that I would never do normally before. And now I manage them. So for me, it was a brilliant combination. Before we finish, I left you in the library one book that was written by my dear friends. It's Ask and You Shall Receive from Receive Joy. On the cover, it has a beautiful angel created from the clouds. And I would say, listening to your story, this book describes more of the how, of how you should just follow your vision. Once you get a calling, once you have a vision, how to pursue that. And how to actually create your own reality just by asking the universe, the God, whatever you call this special force, and then surrendering to the how. And like the people showed in your life, just the right people in the right time, just the land showed up in the right time. That's how we can create everything. So Patricia, how can people find more about Bali Silent Retreat?
That's so easy. Go to Google and type in Bali Silent Retreat.
That's also the website.
Yes, that's the website. And everything is on the website. There's a What to Expect page. There's the rooms page. There's a food page. There's location and transport. The understanding that you need to arrive, your airplane needs to arrive by such and such a time in order to get up here. It's all explained. And it also has a little bit of the history if you want to read about the history again.
Beautiful. And is there a way how people can support you and
Absolutely. Come with open hearts, share your experience, share how Bali Silent Retreat is authentic, and encourage other people to be authentic in their life, which can be very, very painful sometimes, embracing truth. We make a lot of jokes around here about making stupid mistakes, and I make most of them. So sometimes we'll say, well, this is stupid week. In other words, to be free to be truthful with ourselves and with others. So how people could support us is to come here and examine their truth and go back out into the world and share it.
Patricia, I would keep chatting with you for hours, obviously. I just wanna thank you from every single corner of my heart. It was beautiful.
Well, I want to thank you back from every tiny little part of my heart. Here.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So guys, what do you think? Was this a life-changing or what? As you could hear at the end of this interview, I got very emotional. And that is for a reason. Because the 3 weeks have taught me more than probably my whole lifetime. I managed to meet the most beautiful friends. I managed to meet the most beautiful people. I was invited to spend time with local people. And yes, I had to get clear on what is my purpose in this silent retreat at the very early beginning, because I just went there with not really a clear purpose defined. And I realized that being silent just for the sake of being silent does not work. Obviously, if you search for nothing, you are going to find nothing. And if you search for something, you're most likely going to find it. And this is what happened to me. And I know that I normally do not recommend many things unless I try them. And this will be my top one thing that I recommend to you to go and try. Just book there 5 days. And when it's too much, you can still go outside and talk to the villagers who are just in love with all the tourists. They just love being with you. So definitely go on balisilentretreat.com and have a look. Experience at least from pictures how it looks. And guys, just the food, you've heard me. The food is amazing. The staff is amazing. The nature is amazing. And there is so much to do. And there is also nothing to do. So you have absolutely your choice. And at the early beginning of this interview, I've told you about our upcoming stress-free masterclass. It is a 3-part masterclass that is completely for free for you. What we are going to do, we are going to share with you the systems that we teach to our clients that helps them to develop the system and the clarity, to obtain the clarity in order to have the lifestyle that they always desired, the lifestyle of balanced life, harmonized life, where you can have the life and the wealth that you desire, where you can actually do what you love, where you still have the time to spend the time with your family and go with your friends, go with the flow. You don't have to be stressed. You don't have to be overwhelmed. You don't have to work hard. I did not believe this until I one day decided to surrender. So how is it possible that I am right now on a month's trip in Bali and the business is run? Well, obviously, Alexander is as well right now somewhere, I guess, Orlando? I don't even know. So I can tell you, we are both completely away and our business is running smoothly. And it is possible only because our system that we will share with you very soon. So go on earnmoreworkless.com/stressfreemasterclass. And I am very much looking forward to see you there. I wish you a beautiful, beautiful day. And guys, stay creative and stay stress-free.